Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. We do have another whiskey for you. This is a boring, well, not a boring one, but a very, forgive the expression, run-of-the-mill one. It's plain old Bushmills Irish whiskey. It's a blended Irish whiskey. It's an 80 proof. Very easy to find. So sometimes we got some interesting stuff. This is...
Well, I mean, I guess if you're not a big whiskey drinker, right, and you don't know a ton about whiskey, then I think it's good that we go through the exotic stuff and what we would consider run-of-the-mill. But for a lot of people, they don't know much outside of Jameson and Jack Daniels, you know.
Right.
So we have to kind of go through it all. And at some point,
a burden that I'm willing to bear for our
right,
fans.
Right. We will review every single whiskey that we can find for you to make things easier for you when you're out there choosing your own poison.
So I gave it an 87. I think it's really basic. There's nothing special about it. I think my view is somewhat tainted by last week's whiskey, which I think we both over generously rated. We won't need to trash it from last week. You know, if you want to hear what we're talking about, listen to it. But I think this is like very easy drink. It's light, but it's still got a good flavor. Got a little bit of sweetness to it. I'm going 87.
Yep, I went the exact same score, 87.
Okay.
I guess I didn't want to beat this up too bad, considering how bad I wanted to go back and beat up the Knob Creek after the fact.
Yeah,
so,
Knob Creek rye, not regular Knob
right,
Creek.
Right, the Knob Creek rye. Yeah, it's weird how that taste just kind of got worse. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
So, you hit all the major key points. I mean, from a flavor standpoint, notes that you're going to pick up, a little bit of oak, little buttery softness in there.
Definitely a buttery there.
But other than that, nothing too outstanding, but it's not terrible. It's definitely a sippable whiskey. It's a shootable whiskey, which I don't know if that's responsible for me to be telling people, but if you're at a bar and, you know, you typically shoot Jameson and they're out, then Bushmills is a good replacement. I would put it there. You know, if you want to do a shot and they don't have Jameson and they
right.
don't have Bushmills and you can do Powers, which I think we did talk about previously.
I don't think we did Powers on the show.
Didn't we do Powers on St. Patty's Day?
No, we did Jameson. It was a Jameson product. Oh no, maybe you're right. I'm sorry. You are correct. It was Powers.
Thank you.
You are correct. Hey, look.
Thank you. But yeah, so
it was St. Patrick's Day.
Right. But it's not a bad whiskey.
It's good.
It's 87 is nothing to be ashamed of. And I think as we get better at kind of rating the more average whiskeys, then I think those scores will come out to be a little bit more consistent. But 87.
All right. So there's a bunch of like political stuff to talk about and some other fun stuff. But you wrote an article on our website that got, I think, sent up on Political Storm as well. Mm-hmm. And I would say if I was going to talk about like the areas of entertainment that I'm passionate about, we're both big sports guys, but you are a big music guy. I'm a big comedy person. And one of the biggest names in music made some headlines this week, which you commented on.
Yeah, I mean, chances are by now you've heard that Kanye West had a moment on TMZ. He went into TMZ studios like they were doing their typical live webcast show that they do. I think they do it on YouTube Live or something like that. And he went in and just kind of started talking, which for Kanye, not always good.
Right.
And, I'll preface it by saying I'm a Kanye fan. I can separate the artist, the person, the personality from the art.
Okay.
We used to start the show a while ago. We used to start it with a little music clip that I would pick. You know, we would do, you know, Steve's iPod shuffle roulette
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And I wanted to go back to that today, but for different logistical reasons, we didn't do it. But I was listening to Kanye West music. Like I have a new workout playlist. My workout playlists go for about a month and then I change them up. And so about a month ago, I had changed it up and I had a number of Kanye songs in there. Well, they came up, you know, over the course of the week while I was working out, and the songs are still phenomenal. So they don't get removed from the playlist because he is crazy. Now, why am I saying that he's crazy? He goes on TMZ and he starts to talk about his whole situation. It's about a half hour long interview. And I put the whole interview in the article that I wrote on our website so that people could see the full thing for themselves. If you want to stop where he makes the phrase that got everyone up in arms and okay, fine. Or if you want to go through and see the whole thing, then you can. But I wanted to give it, I wanted to make sure that people had that option. What really got people worked up, what got me worked up is when he, there's a point in time in the mini, in the video about 3 minutes and 26 seconds in where he says slavery was a choice.
It happened for 400 years. It sounds like a choice to me.
It happened for 400 years. It's all y'all. It sounds like a choice to me. I've listened to it so many times. I even feel and know his cadence, you know, probably just because of the amount of music of his that I've listened to. But but that statement right there, slavery was a choice, 400 years, all y'all, sounds like a choice to me. And he let that hang out there. And then he goes into the connecting slavery and prison. And
that was the part that he went, at one point he says something like, it's more like prison because in prison, whites and blacks are the same. And I'm like,
We all connect to prison.
Yeah, we all connect. Yeah. I was like, wow. So I would say that slavery was not a choice. Ray J was a choice.
There it is.
That's at least a little bit funny.
There it is.
That's a little bit funny. I'm sorry. If you don't get that, trust me, it's funny.
So this is my thing with what he said. Because a lot of people, and the article is up on Political Storm as well. Political Storm, we work with them. We did the interview with Pat. And my article is up there, and someone replied, and they said, I agree with most of what you said. But the person listed a number of other points, and then they said, doesn't Kanye West have the right to say this?
Absolutely, he has the right to say it.
Yeah, no one is saying he doesn't have... He could say whatever the hell he wants, all right? I mean, he can. I'm not arguing that he can say it, but what I'm saying is that if he's going to put it out there, he's going to put it out there in the public sector for people to consume his thoughts...
Right.
Then we have every right to critique what he says.
Yes.
Right. I have every, like, if he's going to put it out
there. You always have a responsibility to, right? Because he's so much more of a figure than 99.99% of the population. If you're going to put something like that out there, you better be ready for
a critique.
Yes.
And I'm not necessarily saying that what he's saying is wrong. I'm not saying that we didn't have a choice or that black people didn't have a choice. My thing is, if you're going to say slavery was a choice, one, you need to put this in proper context. First of all, Africans didn't choose to be slaves. Now, people want to say, oh, well, African warlords sold. Okay, yeah, fine.
True. But those people still didn't show you. You're right.
They didn't sell themselves. And the other part of it is, you know, 99% of Africans did not choose to be slaves. All right, and we know for a fact that there were people who jumped off the boats into the ocean, into the sea, because they would rather be dead than whatever was on the other side when that boat landed.
Right.
Right. There's a great line in Black Panther, you know, kill me and bury me in the sea, right? Because I'd rather be with my ancestors who knew that death was better than bondage. Right? And that's a powerful line. And any black person who connects with who and what our ancestry is, can feel that line to a certain degree, can feel that thought process. And so what I'm asking of Kanye West, if you're going to sit here and you're going to tell me that slavery is a choice, then you need to tell people what the choices were, right? Because for the initial Africans coming over on the Atlantic slave trade, the choice was slavery or jump off a boat. Some people chose to jump off a boat into the ocean. Right?
Which is a horrific thought.
Right? That's a shitty choice, but it is a choice. And then the people that were here, the choices were stay enslaved, be raped, be whipped, maybe not have enough food, not shoes on your feet. Someone could kill you at any point in time for any reason, for looking at them wrong. They could accuse you of anything. They could blame you for anything. Or your other choice was run away.
Right.
Okay, well, fine, I'll run away. But then when I run away, I'm facing an armed militia. I'm facing dogs. I'm facing, you know, if they catch me, they'll beat me. They may kill me. They may maim me. I could be, again, if you're a woman raped, a man raped, hung, beaten, all those sort of things. And then if I do get away, I have no idea where I'm at. I don't know where I'm going.
It's, you know, I mean, it's not like the Underground Railroad was an organization that had like pamphlets. I mean, those.
Right. I mean, it's not like there were signs, Underground Railroad, here.
This way.
Right. I mean, and not everybody. There were indicators and things along the way, but you had to know the code. You had to know the language, and not everybody knew the language. And so my point is, if you're going to talk about slavery as a choice, then you need to talk about what the choices were. And my thing is, I don't think when he said slavery was a choice, he was actually thinking about the fact that, yeah, they did have a choice, but their choices were so terrible. Go ahead.
So what... Whenever someone like you know, a major entertainer who, I know he's got a new song that just came out. Is it a whole album or just a song? I don't even know.
He's in the process of have a new album also.
Okay. So I always ask myself, okay, is this a marketing ploy? Is this a way to get myself in the national conversation so that people will buy my art? What are your thoughts?
He's married to Kim Kardashian. Whether we like the Kardashian family or Kim Kardashian, whether we like Kanye West or not, he doesn't need to be this insane to sell any. I mean, he could have.
True.
Like, he came back on Twitter, like Kanye West took a hiatus from Twitter for 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
When he sent out a tweet, right, his first tweet, that made national news. Kanye West sends a tweet, and it was nothing other than, "Hey, I'm going to start tweeting again," and that made Entertainment Tonight, TMZ, you know, BS, like all the different like things like that. So he doesn't have to say anything this outlandish to get attention. The other thing is, who exactly is he marketing to?
That, right? That was going to be my question, because it seems like you're trying to appeal to the right.
He's going to try to get all these new conservative, right-wing, white listeners. Okay, well, you've just alienated your black fan base. So
I don't know. I don't know. The idea that he was appealing to right-wingers, it ended up happening that way. Whether that was his intention or not,
I don't think that was his intention. I don't buy
it. But do you agree that that a lot of the right wing media was like, you know, let's listen to Kanye here?
Well, hey. I know for a fact that's what happened. I even wrote about it, and I was listening to it today. There were multiple people who were calling in to Breitbart today, saying Kanye's right. You know, black people have been enslaved for more than 400 years because there was slavery. And then there's been, you know, the Democratic slave plantation and that whole narrative.
Oh boy.
And then it's just like, they had a choice then, they have a choice now. And the choices now are better than they were then. Right. Like, and so they're playing off of what he said, and they're taking it, they're bastardizing it, and they're spinning it in a way that fits their narrative. Right. And that's the consequence of him not articulating this the right way. If you want to come out and you want to make a profound statement like slavery was a choice, then you for damn well sure better make sure that you say what those choices were. Right. If you're saying that slavery was a choice, then tell me what the choices are. You know,
right.
I can't get past that part. That's the part that frustrates me, where he didn't articulate that more and say, yeah, the choices sucked, but. You know, I mean, because if you want to tell me about Harriet Tubman, if you want to tell me about Nat Turner, okay, then fine. They did make choices. For Nat Turner, it ended up in death, and he also may have been crazy. For Harriet Tubman, she did a lot of great things. She saved a lot of people, but she lived the life that she had to live in order to do the things that she did. I mean, that's still, if you had to choose a life living in Hollywood Hills or a life, you know, running and ducking and hiding slaves, and if they find you, they will kill you. They're
living every minute in fear, and yeah.
Right, I mean, constantly on the run, then, all right, but again, those are the choices, and those are the sort of things that we're talking about. I don't care that Kanye is a conservative. I don't care that Kanye loves Donald Trump.
Is he legitimately a conservative?
A lot of black people actually are very conservative. Especially my age and older, they tend to be more conservative. They don't tend to feel comfortable about, like, they're not overly comfortable with the gay movement. They're not overly comfortable with, you know, gay marriage and things like that. They're fiscally more responsible and tight with their money, and you know, they have, you know, strong Christian values that go back to the Southern Baptist Church and the Southern Methodist Church and different, you know, those sort of religious aspects. So older black people, you know, and I say around my age and a little bit older, or all the way, you know, around my age, maybe a little bit older, and then back, in terms of age, are more conservative. Typically, the reason why they voted Democratic were for self-preservation things. Like, Democrats typically were supported by the unions because the Democrats supported the unions. You had a lot of black people who worked in manufacturing and steel mills, like in Buffalo and Cleveland and Pittsburgh and everywhere else. And so Democrats were for the unions, and so they voted for the unions. They were voting for their self-interest, right?
It wasn't necessarily because... Well, and the Democratic Party in the 60s was what spearheaded the civil rights movement. I mean, say what you want about, you know, LBJ.
Shifting and parties and things like that. Yeah, I mean, and exactly. Now, there were pieces of the civil rights movement that came from the Republican Party. This is true, right? I mean, well, you know,
there was Abraham Lincoln.
Well, right. I mean, he got the party started.
Yeah.
You know, if you want, you know, I mean, he kicked it off. But I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and things like that. There was bipartisan work
support
for these things. Now it wasn't great, and there was a great deal of turmoil that happened with the parties. There was kind of a shift in how they viewed things and how they approached voters and voting blocks over time. And listen, I'm not saying that black people should blindly support Democrats. I'm just explaining that for much of the time, the reason why black people tended to vote Democrat from the 60s through the 80s and 90s was because it made sense based off of like legitimate self-preservation issues.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Ronald Reagan and company, they started the war on drugs, which specifically targeted black people, right? So black people were like, well, we don't want to be targeted anymore, so we're going to go with the group that's not targeting us, the Democrats. Right?
Right
now, you talk about Bill Clinton and his hand and throwing people in jail and everything else. It was, that's true, but it's
underreported, right? A lot of people. When I was in college and shortly after college, and was a huge Bill Clinton fan, I didn't know a lot of things about, like, I mean, a lot of the stuff he supported, the whole three strikes and you're in, you know, three felonies, you're in for life kind of thing, even if they're nonviolent. You know, I heard him say the words, but I didn't really attribute like the damage that kind of policy was doing to societies, to people.
Right. And so here's the thing, but the people didn't know, because the people, black people, were asking for tougher crime measures. Crime was out of control, right? Crime was, yes, the crime rate was going down, but you couldn't feel that if you lived in the inner city. I lived in inner city Youngstown. And I mean, one of the star football players at Youngstown State was gunned down, you know, three blocks from where I lived in a drive-by shooting on Christmas Eve. So, you know, I mean, there was violence.
And truthfully, in those days, New York City was a disaster. I mean,
I don't care about New York City. I'm just saying where I live, which is my only frame of reference at the time. In the 90s, it was a very dangerous place to be. It was a risk walking down the street. There were drugs everywhere. You could find a gun walking down the street with a taped up handle. You could find crack rocks hidden. You go to a public bathroom, there's a chance you would find drugs hidden somewhere behind a stall. Like there, I mean, it was a rough time.
Yeah.
And so the parents, my parents, other people's parents, people whose kids were in jail or dying are saying, we need help, right? We need something. And Bill Clinton was there and said, all right, fine, I'm going to give you what you want. Right. And so, yeah, him and Hillary had a lot to do with it. And looking back, it fucking sucks now that we lost a generation of people to prison. But a lot of those people who are in prison, their parents were begging for something. And I'm not saying it was right, but I'm saying that's history. That's what happened.
I agree. The reason I brought up New York City is in the early 90s.
Because you're from the East Coast. And you
well,
have East
I'm
Coast
from
bias.
Buffalo, which is not exactly the East Coast. It's
what the roughly, fuck do you mean?
Buffalo's not East Coast. Buffalo's the same as Cleveland and Youngstown. Ethnically, politically, I mean, fuck, we're 3 hours away from it.
Except for when you talk, except for when Cleveland people talk to people from Buffalo, and you fuckers act like we're nothing.
That's bullshit. That is bullshit.
You've lived here too long. You
don't know. All right. This will go nowhere, but Buffalo does not consider itself East Coast. We're Rust Belt. We're in the same category as Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Detroit. I mean,
we know that. People from Buffalo don't know.
Yes,
that.
We do.
Okay.
All right. Lecture me about what people from Buffalo think. Okay. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with this now.
I don't either.
All right. Fine. Fuck it. Let's move on.
Well, I guess before we move on, I just want to say again, I can separate Kanye's statements from Kanye's music.
Okay.
I'll still listen.
Okay.
Now, beauty is wherever it's released, chances are I have some sort of thing and I'll stream it. I won't necessarily buy it, download it, own it. but I'll stream it because I pay for it properly. So I don't want to get blamed. I don't want anyone accusing me of stealing music. But you know, whether it's through Apple Music or Tidal or whatever, I'll listen. And I'll probably enjoy it if it's good. Because when Kanye's on, he's really good. When he's not, he can be really bad. But again, he also has the right to say what he said. He has the right to be critiqued.
Sure.
And he's been critiqued, and I am ready to move on from it because I don't know. Like, he's obviously in a place right now that you can't really. He's just in a weird place,
right? He talked about how he was on. He went through. He had liposuction, and he got addicted to opioids for a bit. Yeah. I'm like, okay, where's that?
I get where it's. I mean, he got the liposuction because he didn't want to be fat, and people are blaming that on Kim Kardashian. And it's like, listen, Kanye has always been hypersensitive. It doesn't seem that you may not necessarily recognize it, but he's always been hypersensitive. So it doesn't surprise me that he got liposuction. I mean, his mom died from getting plastic surgery.
Right.
I'm not blaming his statements on the fact that he's married to Kim Kardashian. I'm not going to blame his statements on the fact that his mom died. I'm not blaming the statements on the opioids. I think that he is a guy who fashions himself as a deep thinker, as he likes to call himself now, a free thinker.
Okay.
Because he's read some things on social media and he feels like he's got the surface level knowledge. So he's going to tell you how to fix the world. But we know that he doesn't like education. I mean, his first album was, you know, was College Dropout and then Late Registration. And he always talks about how the system, the educational system, is a game and they game you and they screw you and this and that. And he doesn't like to read. And, you know, he can't, you know, like, don't give me a contract because, you know, I can't read. And that's a line from a song. So he's not big on education. And so to get to the level of depth that he wants to get to, that you need education. It doesn't necessarily need to be formal, but you need to read. You need to get into the actual history of whatever it is you want to talk about so freely. And he clearly hasn't done that. And that's why we're getting what we're getting. We're getting these rambling thoughts that are incoherent, that don't make sense, that surface level. And if he did get into more detail and he did expound upon them and connect them, then it would be deep, free thought. And you could listen to him, but that's not what this is. And that's why he's being praised by conservatives, because it's surface level. They can glean from it what they want, mold it into what they need. They can abuse it and manipulate it. They know it. So it's, thank you, Kanye. You gave us a freebie and you look like the other guy. You look like the enemy. So we're going to prop you up as our, you know, inside guy. Thanks, buddy.
Okay. I will not disagree with any of that. And so, like we started out saying, you know, music is your, you know, artistic passion. Mine is comedy. Michelle Wolf hosted the, or whatever, spoke at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Donald Trump was not in attendance for the second consecutive time as president at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And she caught a ton of shit. She was getting vilified on the right and some on the left. A lot of people didn't like what she said. I absolutely loved her thing. If you didn't listen to it, she would. Oh, yeah, I did. I thought it was funny. It was. All right, so I got two things to say about it. One, she's a comedian at an event that is generally a lighthearted comedic event. Stephen Colbert did it and just raked George Bush over the coals when I don't think George Bush was expecting it. It was one of my favorite video clips ever. And typically, this is what happens. You get a comic up there. They say some controversial things. If you are a comic, especially if you're like a Michelle Wolf, who's well enough known. I mean, she had, you know, she's on The Daily Show, and she had a, I want to say, Netflix special coming out, or maybe it's about to come out. So she's not a nobody. But this put her name in front of the world more than anything else she's ever done. And if you take that gig, that's what you want. She made some personal remarks about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and a lot of people were so upset that they would make fun of a woman's appearance and what hypocrites people are for laughing at this and then criticizing the president for what he said. And I just want to say shut the fuck up about that, because she's a comedian doing a comic bit at an event that is intended to be satirical. I mean, they say it's supposed to celebrate the First Amendment, and it is. That's a little bit grandiose in the way they describe it, but it is all about the meeting of politics and the press, and, you know, exposing the fact that these people have to work together, and it becomes like a roast. I thought she was really funny. Some of her jokes were really poignant. She caught a lot of shit amongst conservatives. She made a joke about abortion that was, it was, I mean, it's tough to make an abortion joke that is not in somewhat poor taste. It's a topic that doesn't have a lot of levity. But when she finished with the point saying, you know, she made her jokes, then she said, you know, Republicans are against it until you knock up your mistress or something. I forget exactly how she said it, but that was the gist of it. There's some poignancy to that, right? Because all these folks are beacons of morality until it affects them. And that goes for drugs, that goes for sex, that goes for a lot of things. So I give Michelle Wolf an A+. I thought it was fun. I thought it was very funny. And the indignation and outrage was spewed by the right. And I listened to some Patriot Network and some CNN and some Fox News. And those who expressed outrage, I say, toughen up, Buttercup. The floor is yours.
So I give her a D+.
Okay.
I didn't think it was funny. I thought what she said about Sarah Huckabee Sanders was funny. It wasn't offensive. She actually gave Sarah Huckabee Sanders a compliment, right? She's just like, she takes these lies and she takes the ashes and then she does this perfect smoky eyeshadow thing. saying that, listen, you nail it when you do it. It's just that when you do it, you use the ashes of, you know, the people that you burn in your wake when you're telling these lies up there. I thought that was actually pretty funny. And it was a compliment. It wasn't actually a criticism of her appearance, but people are trying to feign hurt and victim and blah, blah, right, blah, and that whole thing. And so I agree with you with the whole toughen up thing on that regard. But the rest of it, to me, wasn't offensive, although, I mean, I think I don't think that there's a place for abortion jokes. I don't.
All right.
Whatever. You can tell me to toughen up. Fuck off. I just don't think they're funny. I don't think they're funny. I don't think they're appropriate. It's not, it's a fucked up issue. So that's my stance on that. So, I mean, I give her, because, I mean, I watched the thing, and the only thing that actually made me laugh was the thing about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. The rest of it is the same shit we've been hearing for the last 2 years about Trump and its entire administration.
Okay. She also went after the left. I mean, she made fun of Jake Tapper. She made fun of CNN.
Okay, fine. But all of that, I guess for me, this wasn't, it's the same shit that we've been hearing on Colbert Show and Jimmy Kimmel Show and The Daily Show, for the last 2 years. And so it was just the same regurgitated stuff. You know, we don't like you politically and blah, blah, blah. And it's the same stuff. And okay, she went after the left a little bit. Fine.
She did.
Okay. But that shit really wasn't funny to me. None of it, like, it's, and that's also not my type of comedy either.
Okay.
Right? Like the gotcha, punch you in the nuts sort of thing. It just, it's not my type, not my style.
Okay.
And And so that's why I just, it did, nothing offended me. I mean, other than the abortion joke, but I mean, whatever. Didn't necessarily offend me. I just don't think there's a place for it. But she just wasn't funny.
All right.
And it's not because she was a woman. It's just, a comedian that wasn't funny.
Well, and I know how you feel about comedians who you don't think are funny.
And I hate them and I want them to burn in hell.
I'm aware. You know what? That's a personal opinion thing. I found it funny. I personally have a fondness for when people do things like that in a setting that doesn't typically lend itself to it. Now, the White House Correspondents' Dinner does open that door, and this is hardly groundbreaking in that regard. I also find feigned indignation, and that goes all across the board. When was it Dick Durbin who when Trump made the shithole country remark? Mm-hmm. And I think it was Dick Durbin who said, like, "I heard the most vile words ever." I'm like, "Fuck off." The word shithole shook you up that much, you can't represent anyone over the age of 6.
Right.
So whenever people, feigned indignation annoys the shit out of me, especially because it's like so many other things where it's like, you as a politician are talking to me as a constituent, like I am an ignorant child. So I'm not go fuck yourself, whether that's Dick Durbin or Sean Hannity, saying, "I couldn't believe this horrible," did the Rush Limbaugh voice for Sean Hannity. But, you know, the whole anger over what this woman did, I found that anger delicious because it cracks me up when people are such phonies.
Right. And, I mean, like you said, they did. I mean, they basically skyrocketed this woman into a level of fame. I mean, now I can only imagine what, you know.
She's getting booked now.
Yeah, she's getting booked. I mean, her Netflix special is probably going to be, you know, very successful because of it. You know, people like you are going to watch and be all giddy and can't wait. And which
people good. Like you, fine.
That was, no, I mean, I mean, because I'm just like, well, if that's what you got, then this is going to be Amy Schumer all over again. You know?
Here's what's funny about that. She came to Cleveland shortly after she finished doing the tour that did the Netflix special. And multiple people that are my friends in the Cleveland comedy scene went to see her and talked about how pissed off they were because she treated a performance at Hilarities, which is our biggest, you know, comedy venue in Cleveland. She like came in with a notebook and she was basically working new material like she was at an open mic for an hour in our town. And a lot of my friends were pissed that she... No. Well, no, I mean, who cares? But
it was
a big venue, and she treated it like, you know, okay, I'm here doing new stuff. I got my Netflix special wrapped up and recorded, and now let me, you know, spend $45 to $100 for a ticket to watch me work new material for an hour. That's not considered good form.
I see.
All right, we can move on from that.
See, I knew something about her.
There we go.
I knew I didn't like something about her.
Well done, Steve. Well done.
Right? I could smell it.
Way to crack through the veneer of, anyway.
Michelle Wolf. She's a coyote.
Boo. All right, so I get to talk about my favorite thing now. Trump spoke at the NRA's convention in Dallas today, and I watched excerpts of the speech. It's exactly what you'd expect. It was, you know, the Second Amendment is under attack by, well, all right. So when we watched some of this together, the Second Amendment is under attack, siege.
He said, your Second Amendment rights are under siege right now. You know, like, I mean, it's like they're currently under siege. As long as I'm president, your Second Amendment rights will never be under siege. Come on, Donnie. Like, I mean, I get what he was trying to say, but again, he's just all right.
So yes, not well delivered. I mean, the speech was nothing.
Just your standard rhetoric.
Yeah, standard rhetoric. You know, he rants and talked about how, you know, James Comey's crooked, and if Hillary was president, I don't know if he said that exactly, but I do. I didn't see it, but I know he said it.
Something about the Russian witch hunt.
Right? Yeah, that was in there too. So there's one thing that I got a huge kick out of, though, and this is really not part of that speech. Yeti coolers, which do you own a Yeti cooler? Have you ever had one? I've never owned one.
No, I've got Yeti. I got Yeti.
Like
tumblers.
Can holders, okay.
Can holder, an actual tumbler. I have a Yeti coffee mug. and something else, Yeti.
They make a good product.
They do. But I mean, so does Arctic, though. But
so anyway. Does, okay, cool. I own like the next level down and all those things, and I've known, like, I've used Yeti stuff that other people owned. It's top of the line.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's amazing. It keeps your shit hot or cold
for a real long time. So, so Yeti used to have some kind of a discount that they offered to the NRA, and they withdrew it without explaining why.
They actually did explain why.
But after shit hit the fan.
Okay.
Without notifying the NRA in advance. So it kind of hit the NRA blindside, and the NRA attacked Yeti, said that Yeti does not support your Second Amendment rights, and YouTube is currently filled with NRA members packing Yeti coolers with volatile liquids or explosives.
No.
And yes. Are you, do you know this?
Oh no.
Oh yeah. Blowing up Yeti coolers, filling them up with stuff that explodes on contact, putting it 100 yards away and shooting it with a rifle and watching it blow up and putting that on YouTube. Worse than the Keurig thing with Sean Hannity.
Oh my God. Why people are so stupid.
It is hilarious to me. That is so funny.
You guys,
I got my Second Amendment rights and I'm going
to. It's like you guys buy shit just to destroy it. Like you buy it and you hold on to it, hoping that somebody pisses you off so you can destroy it.
This shit is not cheap. Like the reason I don't own a Yeti cooler, they're fucking expensive. They're like several hundred, a couple hundred dollars.
The big Yeti cooler, I have a Coleman in my refrigerator for tailgating or parties or whatever. The equivalent to that cooler, Yeti, I paid $100 for that one. Maybe I think I paid $89 for that one.
Okay.
The equivalent to that same one, because I looked at it.
$600?
$600.
Okay, I was guessing. But they're not cheap. So, all right, look. I am a huge fan of voting with your dollar. If you own a Yeti cooler, they got your dollar already.
Unbelievable.
Mean, I'm glad you didn't know that, so I can kind of surprise you with it.
I can't believe, like, people are like,
literally, Steve, if you go on YouTube and just type in NRA Yeti, you will not run out. You do not have enough hours in the day to get through all of them. And
I mean, it's
and I did what I always. We always go at each other for, and I went into the comment section of some of these, and they were fucking. One of them said, "We need the NRA to get their own brand of coolers." Yeah, if you support Yeti, you hate America. You're anti-American. And I'm like, and one person I give credit to, I didn't jump into this fray because why? But one person said, "Actually, voting with your dollar is very American. Choosing to not use their products is American. Them speaking their minds is also very American. Get over yourselves." I'm like, I'm glad you said that, sir. And it's going to rain down idiocy upon you that you will regret putting a logically thought out thing out there.
It really does blow my mind how ridiculous people are when it comes to, I'm pissed off.
I'm going to destroy something of my own.
I'm going to break my own shit. Like, okay, Junior. Well, go nuts, man.
You showed Yeti.
Right. I mean,
and the truth is, what they did, yes, they basically said, NRA, we're not granting you, you know, a special exemption anymore, but their target customer is hunting, fishing, tailgating, camping. I mean, that's who it is. And if you're so offended that they're not kissing the NRA's ass anymore, and you want to
let me tell you,
all right,
let me tell you something.
Tell me something.
Their target audience is rich boat guy. You know,
yeah, that too. It's definitely true.
It's the people who have yachts here in Cleveland or down in Florida and wherever you go where there's boats, right? Pretty decent sized boats, and nice boats that people have them just to flaunt them. Like, that's who Yeti is targeting. They will tell you it's the hunters and these people, and that's to a degree,
certainly.
It is. But it's the people who are going to want one for their boat, and they're going to want one for their garage, right? Like, you'll have, you know, a family, you know, you'll have one family that buys four of those $600 coolers because, oh, well, it's just such a great value. I mean, they just do such a remarkable job. Barbara, I think I'm going to grab two of these, right? Like, I mean, it's
you
not...
You get mad at me when I do the black woman voice. Now, granted, I didn't do it
terrible.
Well. Very, okay. But actually, funny thing, I was having drinks with a friend earlier tonight, and she was complaining about her dad. Don't do it. You're going to rat me out.
Wait, was it a black woman?
No, it was my friend, my ex-girlfriend. And she was talking about how she hates Yeti because her dad, who is Mr. Keep Up With The Joneses, has some friend from Texas who bought a Yeti cooler, and now he's got to get Yeti stuff to compete with him. Yep. So to your point, that is kind of that guy. All right. I want to move on because I cannot wait to play this.
Okay.
So you introduced me to this video tonight, and this is Don Blankenship, who's running for Senate
out of West Virginia.
Out of West Virginia, out of the state of West Virginia.
Which is the home state of your alma mater.
Of my alma mater, yes. I will call you not my home state, but home state of my alma mater. Here's Don Blankenship's commercial.
Don Blankenship, candidate for U.S. Senate, and I approve this message. Swamp Captain Mitch McConnell has created millions of jobs for China people. While doing so, Mitch has gotten rich. In fact, his China family has given him tens of millions of dollars. Mitch's swamp people are now running false negative ads against me. They are also childishly calling me despicable and mentally ill. The war to drain the swamp and create jobs for West Virginia people has begun. I will beat Joe Manchin and ditch Cocaine Mitch for the sake of the kids.
Wow.
Cocaine Mitch.
So, all right.
China people. His China family.
Swamp people. All right. A lot to break down in 30 seconds there.
So, I can break it down for you relatively quickly. When it comes to China people, Mitch McConnell is married to a woman of Chinese descent. She's also our transportation secretary.
Oh, you're right. I'd forgotten that, but you're right, yes.
And so that's Mitch McConnell's wife, and I think her name is Cho. I can't think of her name. But so that's who Mitch McConnell is married to. Her family owns they did own this massive like shipping company.
All right.
They built boats and they shipped boats and everything else. And so that is kind of the reference when he's talking about China people. Those are the China people he's talking about. Now, why the fuck this guy is calling these people China people?
I can answer that, having lived in West Virginia for 4.5 years, because that's the only word he could think of to say it that isn't an actual racial slur.
Oh.
that was him being politically correct.
Right. I wonder what he calls black people.
I can answer that, too.
For all the little nigger people running around,
No, Don that's Blankenship not what he would say. That's not what he would say. He would not use the word people.
all y'all little nigger babies.
All right.
That explains where all the references to the China people come from. The swamp people.
The swamp rice people, patties?
No. The swamp people he's referring to where Donald Trump said he would drain the swamp.
Okay, fair.
So anyone who's working with Mitch McConnell is a swamp person.
Okay, at least somewhat.
Whatever. Literally like trying to translate a conversation with a toddler. So keep up.
Or slow down. Right?
Right. And then the whole thing where he calls him Cocaine Mitch at the end.
All right. What the fuck?
Okay. So earlier, literally 2 minutes ago, I referenced how Mitch McConnell's in-laws gave them control of the shipping company.
All right.
Well, so one of the boats that the company owns was carrying coal somewhere. I forget the destination. The boat was stopped. They found like a ridiculous amount of cocaine on the boat. And so the connection is this boat that you guys own or had something to do with had all this cocaine on it. And so basically they're saying that Mitch McConnell
is running a drug ring.
Running cocaine through a shipping company.
You know, one of the things Trump ran on, especially in West Virginia and Kentucky and to some extent
Ohio.
Bring
coal back.
Right. And so I was in West Virginia not that long ago talking to a friend about this. And it really hasn't brought coal jobs back because truthfully, most coal jobs are no longer manual jobs. It's now automated. From an environmental standpoint, it's an absolute catastrophe. And the idea that anyone would think digging up a rock that burns is the future of energy in America or the world is just unthinkable to me. I just can't understand how you think that's a good idea. If you let me go down that road, I will bore the shit out of everybody, so I won't. But when I went to West Virginia and visit with a buddy of mine who's, I think, fairly politically conservative, but actually a reasonable and logical guy, a Gary Johnson voter, in fact. He told me that was his protest vote because he knew which way West Virginia was going to go. He said, you do see a lot more coal trucks around. And the truth is, coal is coming out of the ground at a much faster rate than it did under Obama. It's not bringing jobs back, but it is sending coal overseas, probably to China and India, because they do actually still have coal burning plants. So you're looking at me like, who gives a fuck? If you're this guy in West Virginia, you are probably trying to take advantage of that dynamic. You're looking at me like I've got three heads.
Okay.
All right. There is an economic... rich people in West Virginia, and yes, they do exist, are getting richer based on the policies of Trump. And this guy is probably going to rely on those people to get the nomination if he can. And he's going against Joe Manchin, who is a Democrat, who is former governor, now senator. And he's I've heard him talk about how, oh, that's New York politics. And all these folks in places like West Virginia are trying to separate themselves from the image of New York and New York City and Washington. And it cracks me up that they're doing that while simultaneously supporting Donald Trump, who is the ultimate New York City playboy. Right. I mean, literally since 1980, whatever, when I knew who he was, all I thought was, this guy is the ultimate New York City socialite playboy. And they're vilifying New York City while kissing Trump's ass. I find the irony and lack of understanding really funny. I'll back off from there, but that's my rant.
Okay. I'm still having a little bit of trouble of seeing how they're going to make the connection to the coal connection is where you lost me a little bit, just because it's coming out of the ground faster, but it's not bringing jobs.
It's not bringing jobs because it's all automated.
And, right. And so it's not bringing a ton of money into the state except for the very upper top percentage of people. And so he's going to rely on, and I get that.
He's going to get money from them.
He's going to get money on them.
Because as someone who gives a shit about the environment comes back into control, they're going to say, this is a disaster. What mining coal does to the place you pull coal out of is environmentally horrific. I mean, I used to fish in West Virginia, and we would fish in this one creek, stream, whatever, and catch trout that were stocked there and whatever. But there was another one like 5 miles away that no one fished at because it was completely devoid of aquatic life. It was so run over with acid mine drainage from coal mining that it literally was a sterile, not technically sterile, but a lifeless creek when it came to anything you'd want to catch. That's happening there. And West Virginia, as a former resident of that state and a graduate of West Virginia University, I really wish the people who dig in so strong on these things, and these are the same people who will listen to that Trump NRA speech and talk about how wonderful it was, would take a step back. I mean, I know I've told you, I think I said it on the show, that I went to West Virginia to go deer hunting this last year, and I had some guy kind of getting in my face a bit. I hear you're from New York. And I'm like, first of all, I'm from Buffalo. Now, we had our exchange about that today, so that's kind of ironic. But this is a guy who's about to, talk up Trump, but he's telling me, if you're from New York, you don't understand what it's like to be one of us. And I'm like, and you're missing a big connection point here.
Right.
All right.
Big picture, buddy.
Big picture, yes. All right, man. Talk a little sports. And before we do the now famous come at me, bro.
Yeah.
All right. So I did not get to see the second half of the game, of the Cavaliers-Raptors game yesterday. And from what I understand, I missed an epic performance by LeBron James.
You did. I mean, he put on a show, 43 points. I mean, I think it's his fifth game scoring 40 points in the playoffs. And he was just in that spot where he was hitting turnaround, fadeaway, one-legged jump shots like they were free throws. It was ridiculous. He was obviously in control, but the other part of it was you had Kevin Love who scored 27 plus points. You had support from J.R. Smith. You had support from, George Hill.
George Hill had been playing well. I didn't see what he did yesterday.
I mean, you had support from, all these other players. all the support staff or cast, and you're just like, wow, this is what this team could be. I mean, they score 127 points, they win by 18 or whatever. And my concern was, and I got into it on Twitter with a number of people today, was just that was great, except for, listen, we know that this team could quickly revert back to a team that can't play defense and that can't shoot, where LeBron scores 40, but the rest of the box score, it's 0-0-2-4-6-2-4-1 person with 12. And, you know, I mean, it we're not that far removed from that. So I don't know if I'm ready to say that the series is over. A lot of people are. I know you're comfortable saying that. Local radio is comfortable saying that the series is over. If this were last year's Cavs, where you had Kyrie and LeBron and Love, and then Kevin Love, and then I would say, yeah, it's over.
You know, whether it's over or not, from a sports psychology standpoint, the Cavs have done so well against Toronto. They go into Toronto on their home court, game one. Toronto, frankly, outplayed them the entire game and found a way to lose.
Which they should have. Right,
I mean, but they found a way to lose.
Well, yeah,
and that is such a psychological thing, right? When the team that has kicked your ass all these times, you now have them on the ropes. You outplay them. It's at your place, and when it's all said and done, you lost. Exactly. That sucks.
Well, because
and I've been on that side of. I mean, stupid level stuff. An intramural fucking softball that I still haven't let go, and that was 20 however many years ago. And I'm not making millions of dollars. I'm not a professional athlete. So when that gets done to you in front of 20,000 people with these kind of stakes, that has to get in your head.
Well, I think everyone knew going in that the Cavs needed to get one of two games in Toronto.
Right.
Most everyone was willing to concede game one because
They weren't burned out.
Right, they had played seven games. They had a minimal amount of rest. You figure they kind of coast through game one. They get their ass handed to them. And the Cavs come back, and then they win game two.
Right.
And then it goes back to Cleveland 1-1, and it's a series, and you've neutralized home court advantage for the Raptors. Well,
right.
Not what happened. Raptors gag their nuts off, can't make a shot towards the end, and oh, by the way, LeBron didn't score a point in overtime of game one, and the Cavs still find a way to win, and the Raptors say, well, we didn't shoot well, but the Cavs didn't shoot well either. And that was the other part of it. So tonight, or last night,
yeah,
the Cavs shot better, but so did the Raptors. I mean, DeMar DeRozan...
They scored 110 points.
Right. I mean, DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, they were both over 50% shooting. You know, Kyle Lowry was at 60% shooting. So you're not going to get a much better shooting performance out of the Raptors, and they lose by 15, 18 points. And so you're seeing a Cavs team... That if they can continue to play at this level, and maybe if they can, and the biggest thing that I got on Twitter today was the Cavs need to play better defense, right? I mean, you just can't continue. And part of the problem is
you can't outscore everybody all the time.
Well, you can't outscore everyone all the time, but the Cavs don't have a center. They don't have someone in the middle of the court who can stop people from just going down the lane and getting layups, and that's what hurts them defensively.
And so, it's almost brutal to watch sometimes.
It is. I mean, it's sometimes I look at it and it seems like you could dribble down the middle of the court and score on the Cavs defense. I mean, that's just how bad they play sometimes. So
I'm just gonna let that linger because I know if I respond, you'll jump all over it. So anyway,
it's kind of giving you a compliment.
I know, kind of.
That's your chance to score an NBA game.
I can cross over. Or at least I could when I was 25 years younger.
Can you cross over a basketball right now without pulling or tearing something off the bone?
See, that's unnecessary. Okay. That doesn't help. Anyway, the
answer is no.
It would be ugly. It was funny for me because I was getting on a plane. So I got on a plane and they were up like 9 or 11 as I was getting on the plane. The Cavs were. And then I land and the first thing I do is I pull up my phone and check the score and I went, whoa. And the kid sitting next to me says, Cavs win? And I'm like, oh, yes. And I flashed the score, 128-110. All right.
Listen, I mean, I had to do that with the Cavs
in the championship series. Yeah. That was a great story.
That was brutal. So I don't want to hear your shit.
I'm not complaining. It was funny to me.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway. This is we're now in the right mindset for come at me, bro. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
You go first. It's
your all right. All right. So sticking with the NBA, is LeBron James a Cavalier next season?
Ooh, that's good. That's good. Is LeBron James a Cavalier next season? Let me preface this by saying, I don't believe LeBron James knows the answer to that question right now. I think a whole hell of a lot of that will have to do with how Kevin Love plays the rest of the playoffs and what the Cavs and Dan Gilbert specifically are willing to do to get another piece in here. Obviously, Kevin Love is not enough, but I think the other part of it is if Kevin Love plays the rest of the playoffs, save for one or two games like he did last night, where you get a legit double-double and not just 10 points, 10 boards, but you get 20-plus points and 10-plus boards out of Kevin Love. If you can do that, if Kevin Love can do that, then there's a little less pressure on the organization, but they still need to bring another piece in. Now, all that being said, yes, LeBron James is a Cavalier.
Okay. That's what you said like over a year ago. You were saying that all the people saying he's going to walk were wrong. I was wondering if that had changed in your mind.
I wavered.
Again. Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I
wavered in the, you know, watching that first series. I was like, this dude's out. But I think that I don't think LeBron wants to move his family again. In reality, I don't think that LeBron wants to be known as a mercenary. It's not about money. He can only, I mean, the Cavs can pay him the most money. They're the only team who can pay him the max, contract. But LeBron doesn't care about money, right? Which is why the rest of the places don't really matter, because it's not about money. And if
he's going to get his money outside of his contract.
I mean, he's already got $1 billion contract from Nike, or a lifetime contract from Nike that's worth about $1 billion. Not to mention Sprite and Kia and Samsung and whoever else.
Right.
I'm sure there's something in Asia that we don't even know about. It's not about money. It's not about location. LeBron knows that he can be anywhere within a couple hours because of
private jets. Yeah, exactly.
And so I honestly don't think he wants to. I think he knows that if he moves again, if we're talking about his legacy, LeBron went to Florida. He went to Miami. He played for the Heat. He won a couple titles there. He's coming back. He broke Cleveland's heart. He came back to Cleveland. He won a title in
that
Cleveland.
Right.
And so that sort of culmination of events, it was kind of a slide off the radar of 1, 2, 3 Mount Rushmore. And then he put himself right smack dab right in the middle. And you could argue right next to Jabbar, right next to Jordan.
I'm with you.
You know, those are the three faces right there. But if he moves, right, goes to Houston, goes to L.A., goes to Philly, now it's just like, yeah, well, I don't know, man. Right? Like, now you're just the guy going from team to team to team. Are you Michael Jordan, or are you Robert Horry? Like, what are you, you know? And watching him play, you know that he is, you know, top three greatest players of all time. And it's pointless to me to say who's number one, who's number two, who's number three. You could do it if you got a sports talk show, and you need to. But I'm putting those three guys at the top. And if you say you have to take one, I'll close my eyes and just point. And whoever I get, I'll take Kareem. I'll take Jordan. I'll take
Magic. LeBron.
I'll take LeBron. You know, I think it's Jordan, Russell. I think it's Jordan, LeBron, Kareem. And that's my top three.
All right.
And I don't care about order at that point.
Way
of saying yes, he'll be here.
Okay. Well done. I want to throw in one goofy thing just because I flew back to North Carolina on Sunday, day of game 7, and I landed right as the fourth quarter was starting. And I actually went to the bar to watch the end of the game. It was the same bar that I watched the decision in. And I went there on purpose. I'm like, I watched his last game in
bad
Cleveland.
Juju,
no, I thought this is it. If he can win here, it was that or Hooters. Now maybe I chose poorly, but I had a good time at Trolley in Raleigh, North Carolina, watching LeBron carry the team for that win. And I don't want to go too far down the hole. Let's analyze the playoffs. So come at me, bro. What you got?
So this is a little bit weird, but let's say this. There's a little bit of what if and nuts and
all right,
cherries and candy butts. But let's say Trump, the whole reason why he's trying to shift immigration policy, he's going to send the Hondurans back, he builds a wall, and they get rid of, you know, 90% of the remaining illegals in the country.
All right.
If he did that, and you take away the burden, air quotes,
right,
of illegal immigrants, and then he turned around and wiped out all student loan debt, right? Because we know the burden, and this is something that's been tossed around.
I almost like it better when you come up with your come at me, bros, last minute, because this one's thought out.
Right. All right. But like, so he wipes out student loan debt because we no longer have the burden of illegal immigration, you know, the cost of it, supporting them, social, whatever. And you can argue how accurate that is.
I'll not do that for purpose of the question. Go ahead.
But at that point in time, let's say this happens by 2020.
All right.
And he does it successfully.
Okay.
Do you vote for Trump then?
Ooh, fuck. Not based solely on that. I mean, I'm not saying he's eliminated student debt, so all these kids are not paying student loans into their mid-40s. I mean, again, so I'm not going to argue the premise of whether or not illegal immigration is the burden that makes that economically feasible.
He's also taking care of illegal immigration.
Okay, so now we're... Oh, boy. I don't vote for him. I don't 100% vote for him.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means I vote 50%. I'm joking. It means that there would be other things I would take into account. If he had done... If his opponent is someone that I think, okay, thanks, Don, you did great work, you did these things, but you did enough other fucked up stuff, and the guy that's running against you, or girl, or woman, that's running against you, yawn, is, you know, I think the right person to carry the mantle, he doesn't automatically get my vote. However, if he accomplished things that would literally change the landscape of the economy.
Let's say the whole thing with the war between North Korea and South Korea is over, and they merge as one country, right?
All right, that would be a huge feather in his cap.
Merge as one country. He resolves the illegal immigration issue, and we resolve the student debt issue, which reignites the economy.
Those would be things I would give him a ton of credit for, and he would have a very solid chance of getting my vote if that happened. It would not necessarily mean that there wouldn't be other things that could change my mind. So
at this point, based off of that set of circumstances, what's preventing you from pulling the trigger for voting for Donald Trump?
No, a lot of things. Honestly, illegal immigration is not an issue that I put very high on my list of concerns. Student loan debt is, because I do think it's hurting young people's ability to start their careers and start their lives. Much more important to me would be going after mass incarceration. I always sound funny when I talk about how passionate I am about marijuana laws changing when I don't use that product, but the people who are in jail for it for long periods of time.
I mean, so just to not to completely derail you, but a lot of the people who are vehemently against any sort of gun control and that are the biggest proponents of the Second Amendment and, you know, pro-gun, a lot of the guys from Breitbart have only fired a gun once, don't own a gun.
Right.
There's a number of people, like that with the whole gun debate. Right. So I get what you're saying with there. Which is not, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's just...
Just because I'm not I'm a supporter of an issue that doesn't personally affect me.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, right. So, well-crafted question. I'm not saying that if those things happen, Trump would have my vote. But I would say, like, right now, if you asked me, would you vote for Donald Trump in 2020? The answer would be so close to absolutely not that I would say there's 0% chance. If he accomplished something that big, that would change my opinion. And it would make me think.
Well, and this is what I'm curious about. Along those lines, Chuck Schumer introduced the bill to basically decriminalize marijuana across the board,
right?
From a federal standpoint. So what if that goes through? What if you don't get a ton of obstruction? What if that does go through? The way that bill is crafted, that's the bill that I've been looking for. You know, since we've been talking, you know, like Cory Booker introduced his,
right.
His was dead in the water from the get-go because it just, like, it didn't have the detail. It didn't lay it out the way it was, the way that took pressure off of the way that Schumer has crafted it takes pressure off of people. It allows them to support it in a way where they're not going to get beat up when they go back to their different constituencies.
Right.
You know, maybe in states like Alabama, maybe, you know, like they're just going to fight it no matter what. But some of your other middle of the road, you know, kind of sort of states, you won't get beat up that bad, which means that it's got a better chance of actually being successful. The way Cory Booker's was written was kind of like this is never going to pass. This just flat out is just, it sounds too liberal, if that makes
sense. I mean, let's face it, when legalized marijuana was on the ballot in the state of Ohio, it failed miserably, mostly because it set up a business structure that monopolized very few small entities to make money off of it. And a lot of people said, you know, I want legal pot. I know a lot of potheads who said, I want legal pot, but not at the price of this bill or this, you know, potential law.
So when they rearranged it and they did it, they ended up still doing the same exact thing.
When did they do that?
Have you not been paying attention?
Apparently not. I've been traveling. Okay. We'll talk about this some other time.
Yes.
All right. So that was Whiskey Congress derailment. I know there's something on the ballot, but I don't know what it is, to be honest with you. So we can pick that up next time. Anything else you want to say before we roll?
No, we're good.
All right, Stephen, good talking to you, brother.
You too.
We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. If you're listening to this, you know where to find us, but please spread the word. Thanks a lot, and we're out.